I never forget the first moment when I walked into a cinema. I was hooked from there on.
Hello and welcome to the second Skin On podcast. I'm the site's managing editor, Niall Murphy. And with me today is reviews editor, Philip Bagnall, and features editor, Jason Kyle.
Okay, I want to start off this week with some movie news, but also more to see what your reaction is, what your take is on certain things. Particularly today when Captain America synopsis of the after scenes spoiler came out, and the what do you make of that?
Well, having seen it, I can tell you that it is quite a big thing. Yes. So the fact that they revealed what it is.
It's the concept of the rush tell people what the news is on superhero movies, in particular superhero movies. This mad rush to just, this person's being cast, I got this leak. It's news
about news about news, seemingly, without
it's
really
pathetic.
Being able to do a film.
It's absolutely pathetic.
I actually don't know the Captain America news, so I'm completely spoiler free.
There are two credits things, a mid credits thing and a post credits thing that are in the new Captain America film. And
two of them, really?
Yes. Okay. And the synopsis of what they are, or a detailed breakdown of what they are, went live on a Belgian site this morning.
A Belgian site? Okay.
Yeah. Myself and Philip, we've seen the film. We're under embargo. As of 9 o'clock this evening, that embargo is lifted for Twitter and social media, but not for the review until the 20th of March.
This gets absurd, really. That
it is.
Tell me, you can mini review it.
We can mini review it, but we can't full review it. Yeah.
I just don't understand this. This makes no sense to me whatsoever.
No. So anyway, yeah, that's our take on it.
Yeah, no, it's just it is just a madness.
But it's an industry built around rumor,
hearsay, and conjecture.
Stories to kind of push the movie. Then magazines will get involved with their preview, exclusive interview on sets, all this thing. Then all of a sudden, the movie gets 5 stars. You see it a lot.
Yes,
and it's sadly depressing. You do see it a lot. But you know, that's just the way it is. Somebody has to feed the monkey.
So what I was going to ask is, did anybody see anything they particularly enjoyed since we last recorded, in the cinema or otherwise?
Since the last week. Grand Budapest Hotel.
How was it the second time around?
Just as good. Now, mind you, it helps that we were both in a room full of loons dressed as our favourite Wes Anderson character. Me included.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were all here in the lighthouse and it was able as quite something.
Yeah, well. The amount of Max Fishers there weren't enough Royal Tenenbaums. There were a few. There was only one Chaz Tenenbaum. I was gutted.
Chaz.
I imagine that a red tracksuit is quite difficult to find if you don't live in Liverpool.
That's probably true. I did actually watch Moonrise Kingdom. I rewatched Promising Wood at the Grand Budapest Hotel. And whilst I liked it a little more, I still have some problems with it. I think it's too whimsical. Two kids
hang
are great.
Hang on.
Even by Wes Anderson standards, it's too whimsical. It almost floats away that it's not really anything.
It's too whimsical. And Grand Budapest isn't?
No, but Grand Budapest has more to it. It's moving. It's surprisingly moving, Grand Budapest.
I found Moonrise Kingdom quite moving.
I didn't. I didn't invest that much. Although the two kids are great.
They are.
I didn't invest in the story enough, though.
I find pretty much all of his films moving, with perhaps the exception of Life Aquatic. And even then,
I found that bit moving weirdly, though.
That film is moving. Darjeeling Limited is not.
I think it is.
I think it is, but it tries too hard to be. There's a midway shift.
But I think it gets away with it just about.
It's awkward. I would say
Moonrise Kingdom is his weakest one.
No, Darjeeling Limited is his weakest one.
I say Life Aquatic. Wow, we're really spitting this one.
Yeah.
Anyway, yes, Grand Budapest. Go see. So, on to the business of the day.
Yes, and the Irish box office top 10 today.
Go on, then.
I did up the column, and so the top 10 at 10.
Mm-hmm.
Your favourite film of the last month, The Book Thief.
Yay.
In its second week.
Is
down to number 10.
Brilliant. Keep avoiding it, people. It's the only way we can kill the creature.
Well, I've avoided. No, I can do so.
Bravo, sir. Let me shake your hand. I am shaking his hand. This is a problem with this kind of gag. It doesn't work on a podcast.
We'll be glad that we'll CGI in the handshake later.
Oh, actually, I am incorrect. It has is a 9.
Oh, quick! Oh. Avoided more. What's number 10?
Number 10 is Tinkerbell and the Pirate Fairy.
Okay. we agreed last week we hadn't seen it. We weren't going to see it. So
if you slip out of top 10, that'd be terrific. Someone would have
put
it again.
Oh, the poor fairies. Yeah. Poor Tom Hiddleston. Poor Henry.
So at number 8 is the second animated film in the list, Mr. Peabody and Sherman, which opened this week in the US to less than stellar numbers. So.
Okay. Again, like we said last week, it's remarkable what it's done considering it had to go up against the Lego movie.
And it crossed €1 million mark during the week.
In Ireland.
It has made a million euro. Yeah.
Good for him.
good for Mr. Peabody.
Good for you.
Good for everybody.
At 7, in from last week and down to number 7, Ride Along, the US smash hit comedy with Ice Cube and Kevin Hart.
Not proving such a smash hit here, I take it.
No, not at all. Or anywhere else in the world, for that matter, outside the US and Canada.
See, this is what I said last week. Who is Kevin Hart? I don't think anybody outside the US really cares.
I know, we're always willing to see a new comedic talent. That's probably true.
Careful now. Somebody said the same thing about Martin Lawrence at some stage.
And Kevin James.
And Kevin James, oh good.
Beware of the Kevins, I
no,
say.
No, Kevin James was never a comedic talent.
He was never a comedian.
No, yes, true that.
At 6, and the last of the Oscar movies, so award season is pretty much over at this stage, Dallas Buyers Club.
Ah, there it is again.
It's fine.
Yeah, it is.
It dropped just 1%.
Wow, there you go. That's what happens when you get 2 acting awards. It does.
Interestingly enough about it, I've talked to a few people that have seen it last week, and a lot of people like it a lot more than I do.
Mm.
And they wouldn't be particularly film buffs, per se, but really engaged in the story, really like it. So it seems to have a little bit of legs, and it seems to be doing its thing.
Yeah, I'm just sorry that it seems that 12 Years a Slave isn't in the top 10 anymore.
No, it dropped out.
Oh, well, still, it has Best Picture. It will forever be in our memories.
At number 5 is an Irish entry into the top 10, The Stag, a new comedy from John Booker.
Which I will be seeing in approximately
45 minutes.
45 minutes. So I've yet to see very good things.
We all have. Admittedly, again, I haven't seen it, but, you know, if it's got good word of mouth, so we're always willing to give it a go.
I'd say it seems to have done pretty well.
Yeah, made 106,000.
That's pretty good.
That is pretty good.
I mean, some Irish ones that make quarter that if they're lucky.
Yeah, but it's more than the combined figures for Zona and Grabbers.
If this wasn't radio or podcast, I'd be saying a minute silence for Grabbers, which should have been huge, but it wasn't. But we had that there.
And I had forgotten Zona had existed.
Yeah, most of
it. I was looking back through the box office series for Irish comedies, and apart from The Guard,
which was
$500,000 in its opening week, this is up there.
Wow. Oh, well.
Which is pretty good.
Yeah, Keep going, fellas. Yeah,
hopefully it'll stay up there for a little bit.
Yeah, exactly.
At 4, it's Ballymena's Finest. Liam Neeson, hey!
Non-stop?
In Non-stop,
I haven't seen Non-stop. I probably won't see Non-stop.
I will, on a plane, or on Saturday TV.
Actually, I'd imagine a plane would be the worst place to
I saw watch Flight on a plane.
Oh, dear God.
Oh, jeez. I say 9 months from now, Saturday evening on Channel 4, you'll be seeing Non-stop.
Unless anybody has watched 1993 on a plane at some point, I don't think there's any topic.
I suspect, like Room 66 in the hotel room. It just won't happen. They just don't like those things. What's up, United 93 playing?
Indeed.
There's elements of United 93 in Non-Stop.
Yeah, but
just
I'm sure Liam just punches elements. Them to death.
not an awful lot.
Interesting story actually came up this week as an aside that Liam Neeson missed out on the Bond role years past.
The Bond role?
The Bond role.
I've heard that.
Seems quite absurd to me because I don't see how we could have played Bond. I don't see it.
It's Brosnan era.
Yeah, so I can see Brosnan though. He's an eyebrow away from Roger Moore.
He turned it down because his late wife Natasha said that she wouldn't marry him if he played Bond.
You good woman.
Good woman.
Saved him from
indeed.
George Lazenby like one film.
Neeson would make a good Bond villain.
He would.
Yes, he would. I got a feeling at this stage he'd kind of chew the scenery a bit.
Oh, and then some.
But then again, Javier Bardem got away with it. So, yes, have at it, I say.
Yes, agreed.
So, at 3... is Wes, the Grand Budapest Hotel.
With astonishing money.
Yeah, five grand or $5,500 per location. So by far the highest figures. So 22 sites.
Wow.
That is huge average.
You're sure there was, but there was four sellout screenings here.
Friday night.
On Friday night.
Oh, they had kept adding and adding, didn't
they?
They kept adding, all four screens sold out.
That's amazing. Isn't it, though? And
it's heartwarming. It actually makes me really happy.
Yeah, me too. But even bigger than that, in the States, it only got limited release, I think, four screens, four locations this weekend.
$200,000 per screen average.
It broke the record for the highest limited release live action movie. I think it's just about jostling with Kevin Smith's Red State for the record at the moment. It's huge.
Good lord, I hope he beats that record. Indeed. So we can wipe Red State off the record.
Red State had a higher per ticket
redneck audience.
Yeah.
So sorry, I apologize.
No, but Red State had a higher tickets cost.
Oh, okay.
So the viewer numbers are indeed, bigger, are indeed. Bigger for
Grand. Well, that's great.
This is great to hear. I'm very happy with that.
And it's opening wide now next week in the US. Or it's going to over 1,000 locations.
Oh, let's hope.
Let's hope we see something similar here.
So at 2 is the Lego Movie.
Oh, it fell
at long last, but it was only barely beaten to the number one spot.
Oh, okay.
So it only lost out by 12,000.
Wow, it's
still doing good business.
It's its fourth weekend. And not only it's its fourth release weekend, but it had a preview weekend. So it's its fifth weekend.
That could be going for some time.
That's going to be one of the biggest surprises at the end of the year when we're looking back on all of this.
It will pass 3 million very soon.
Wow.
We look forward to hearing that. That's great.
You will hear it here first.
Perhaps. And at number one, the highest opening of last week, the sequel to Zack Snyder's Epic Man Fest 300. It is
301.
301. Or as my colleague John says, because it's a prequel and a sequel and an interquel to 300, it's 299 to 301.
Hey. If it was called that, I may be more intrigued to go see it.
Epic Manliness featuring one very epic one, Ava Green. I still haven't seen it.
I won't see it. I'm cutting away the nonsense films a little bit, so that will be disappear off my list.
Mind you, considering the quality of the previous film and just the expectations for this, the reviews have been middling, actually, which is a surprise. It could have been disastrous.
It doesn't have Zack Snyder directed it, so I mean, there's a bonus straight after that.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean, they're already winning.
We can't wait for Man of Steel 2.
The director apparently has put in more slow-mo shots than Zack Snyder did in the original.
Even possible?
Apparently so. Yeah. It's like somebody taking a J.J. Abrams franchise and putting in even more lens flare.
What craziness is this?
The movie opened absolutely massively in the U.S.
Yeah, I saw that.
And so
it's not surprising in its own way.
Well, not really. I mean, it's the post. It's right after the Oscars, so really, this is a dumping ground.
Emptily entertaining. I think this phrase will probably be used.
Exactly. That's just what this time of year is for. It's a few bits of chat before
something decent starts moving.
It's the fourth highest opening film in March in the U.S.
Wow.
Forever.
That would be broken easily enough.
Which I suspect it's not a particularly good month.
No, the number one, Alice in Wonderland.
Oh, good God.
God, this is a real roll call of shame. This is the reason
why I bring it up. $116.1 million. Number two,
good Lord.
Dr. Zaius's The Lorax.
Which I've never even seen, but I've heard it's dreadful.
Dr. Zaius.
Yeah.
Oh, Dr. Zaius. Zeus, man. Zeus.
It's Zaius.
That's the guy in the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, that's why I say it.
Oh, for God's sake.
70.2 million. So that...
Hey.
Utter rubbish. It is appalling nonsense. It is environmentalism as a cartoon and not Fern Gully.
But not well done. This is
good
Wall-E.
Environment.
It never is. Well, unless you're Wall-E, that's never well
I'm
done.
I'm Fern Gully.
The Lorax, I was just going to say Fern Gully as a bad example.
No.
Yes.
The only good thing about that film is Tim Curry reprising his role from Rocky Horror Picture Show, except he's a cloud of smog.
I watched it when I was six. I enjoyed it. I haven't watched it since.
Tim Curry in anything is a wonderful addition to any movie.
He makes it.
One of my favourite and more underrated comedies of the last 20 years is from Loaded Weapon.
Now, that is underrated.
Tim Curry plays a wilderness girl selling cookies in Brooklyn.
Yes.
And it's a wonderful game. And he says like, wilderness girls. It was creepy.
He still has the mustache and beard. Yeah, it is.
By the way, if anybody hasn't seen that movie, it is magnificent. And
National Lampoon's
underseen. Make a note. Criminally underrated. It's fantastic.
Yep.
He's also, by far and away, the best thing in Home Alone 2.
Yes, he is. Yes.
Wouldn't be hard.
He's great at everything.
If 300,
up. It's awfully cold outside.
If 302 is the fourth highest rocket, what's third?
The third highest is Watchmen.
Ah,
so Zack Snyder's
There's
Watchmen.
A connection again. Zack
Can't we stop him making it?
Yes, but this is one film that I would be incredibly willing to forgive if not for a few things. It's, I've said it before and I'll say it again, very noble attempt to achieve the impossible.
In fairness to Zack Snyder, and I do almost make a career of slacking him off at this stage, but he did make a very, very passable Dawn of the Dead remake.
Very.
It's really good.
It's really good.
And so I remember thinking, this guy has something, and then being made to eat my own words repeatedly. Repeatedly, ad nauseum.
When allowed to do his own movie without any studio intervention, he made Sucker Punch, therefore he must be stopped.
Oh,
no, I can't really top that ever. That's perfect.
So, Rise of an Empire is 4-5 is Wild Hogs.
Oh, no.
That poster terrified me when it came out. These CGI men leering at the camera. It's disgusting.
It is.
Was it Tim Allen, William H. Macy?
That's the one.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
It is Space Cowboys on the road with motorbikes.
I like Space Cowboys. That's all I'm going to say to them.
Let me guess. Title track by Adele Dazeem.
Yeah. Sixth film and the only good one in this top
this
10.
This may be the greatest top 10
ever.
Ever. But go on.
Rango.
Hey, I love Rango.
Rango.
Adore is Rango. Brilliant. It's marvelous.
Chinatown as a cartoon.
With the possible alone. Exception of the main big villain.
I liked him.
Aside from that, everything is brilliant. That's just
really the bats scene. The scene with the
played Rise of Valkyries on the banjo.
On banjos.
It's fantastic. Agreed. I actually may watch that scene again. That's fantastic.
Okay, next is 10,000 BC.
Next.
Never seen it, never will.
Michael Cera, his finest. Oh, wait, no.
what?
Then Bringing Down the House.
Again.
I did not see that.
I didn't hear, never seen it.
Was that Steve Martin? Latifah?
Yes, I believe so.
Oh god, no, never saw it.
I have seen 10,000 BC. I will never watch Bringing Down the House. I will never watch anything Queen Latifah in this. Just, no.
You should really watch Chicago.
I did watch Chicago.
Yeah, Chicago.
I've almost entirely forgotten it, such as its impact on
it. Yeah, I'd rather watch the musical than an actual.
Yeah, I'm not saying that's not absolutely true, but as an adaptation of these things go, well worth the look.
I remember not hating it, but yeah, I can't sum it up practically anything about it.
Well, we'll put it this way, like we were discussing about the Oscars last week, it's one of those films where it's perfectly good, but it wasn't Best Picture material. Two Towers all the way.
We won't get into that again.
But let's round off this top 10, because it's really starting to depress me.
Yep, it is the remake of Kindergarten Cop, which wasn't a remake of Kindergarten Cop, Vin Diesel's The Pacifier.
Oh dear. Vin Diesel's The Pacifier. That's just...
Was it Vin Diesel or was it The Rock?
No, it's Vin Diesel. If it was The Rock, it could have been awesome.
No, The Rock was in Tooth Fairy. That was it. Yes. That one was just
right. They're just... They're the same people that Hulk Hogan was in the early 90s. Really.
Suburban
like
Commander.
Mr. Nanny and stuff like that.
Yeah.
They're just that interchangeable guy in a leotard.
Oh, God.
Because it's funny to see a massively bulky man dressed
in the leotard.
Yeah.
And at 10... Starsky and Hutch.
Now that's passable.
I didn't mind it.
It's fine, but it
wasn't as good as it should have been.
It wasn't as good as Zoolander.
The setup was great, and it should have been really good.
It has a hilarious scene where he's running down the beach with the headphones and it falls out and the battery's falling.
And I have to say, I didn't mind Snoop Dogg as Huggy Bear. That was
no, it's fine.
It's fine. Two passable films on that list.
Yes. So
one passable, one really good, the rest,
I think you should dig up a bad list from every week. I like to dissect a really bad
list. This may be our new regular feature.
I like it.
This week's new releases.
Oh, hang on.
Yeah.
We have
a special one. It's not on the release calendar, but The Muppets Most Wanted is going to go into cinemas as a 3-day limited release for the St. Patrick's Day weekend. Before every other country in the world.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Are we allowed to talk about it then?
Yes, we are.
Oh, we are allowed to talk about it now.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Despite signing embargoes with Disney, myself and Philip are now allowed to talk about it.
I never signed anything.
You're right.
It's fine. It's okay.
Yeah, exactly. It's In fact, it's not even fine. It's my feeling on this is the first one, I had a lot of fun with it, but a lot of that was down to nostalgia.
Plus, the first one kind of sandbagged me a little. Because I had low, relatively low expectations of it, and yeah. It actually surpassed them easily, and yeah. Easily passed the laugh test. I mean, the songs were great.
Yeah,
you better leading man.
Yeah, you could tell Jason Segel was coming at this with a lot of heart and a lot of
investment. And he knew the mythology, he knew the history of it, he knew the feel of it. The tone was right.
The tone is right, yes, but the problem with the follow-up is there's none of that heart. Segel is not involved in this, so...
Yeah, replaced with Ricky Gervais, who's fine in the right type of comedy, but his fit for certain things doesn't really work. I don't think he worked at Simpsons, I don't think he works here.
No.
It's just an awkward, sneering kind of fit to it. That doesn't,
basically,
it takes a change in tone, and the tone doesn't... It doesn't work for him.
Yeah, it's not great. As well as that, the songs aren't as memorable.
Couple of songs aside...
No.
There are some bad CGI. The end CGI quite bad.
I know that sounds like a flippant complaint with the Muppets movie, but there's a lot of stuff here where you just feel they're not putting their best into it. Even the plot, which is an overly complicated plot involving swapping Kermit.
And overly complicated.
Yeah. Swapping Kermit with an evil doppelganger.
The idea is fine. And he'd even fit in a Marx Brothers matching mirrors.
Yeah, that was
fine,
nice. That
which we always enjoy those kind of things.
Yeah, no, that aspect of it was good, but there's one absolutely glaring bad aspect of the film, and it is the opening number. The fact that they were so lazy that they would not change the name of the film from The Muppets Again to Muppets Most Wanted, but the title song
is
The Muppets Again, and they do not change.
But the song is good, though.
The song is good.
So you get away with it. It's the best song in it. And lead you to hope, more hope than you really should have.
As well as that, in terms of the humans that are involved,
wasted.
Tina Fey is passable. Gervais is annoying. Ty Burrell is particularly annoying with his Inspector Clouseau shtick. And there's a lot of cameos here, and you feel like there's a lot more emphasis on the cameos than say the smoothness of the plot mechanics.
And I will say though, the one I'm a sucker for this, but. But Usher, as an Usher, was fine for me. I really laughed at that. I laughed hard at that. Just
spoiler.
Because I'm silly. Yeah,
we won't spoil anymore. There are some good cameos here. There are some big laughs. And there's a couple of good songs. But overall, it doesn't compare to
the first. Feel it's a weakness of a comedy. And it's a weakness that animated films, non-Pixar animated films, seem to have too. Where they want to cast famous people. Or they want a cameo from famous people. Or whatever. To make up for the fact that the film is not as funny or as good as it should be.
Exactly. It also dates the film quite badly as time goes on.
Yes, it does. Yes.
It's fine. The Muppets Most Wanted is entertaining. If you have children, they'll enjoy it.
Yeah. And it's going to be a big hit regardless of what we are in the other critics
say. And you're going to see a scarcely, and I mean scarcely, recognised in Dublin.
Well, that's because it's not Dublin.
No.
Yeah, part of it is set in Dublin, but it's not Dublin.
I don't know what it is.
It uses some stock footage of the city. It puts a railway station on the quays.
Mind you, that is a very twee-looking railway station.
Oh, it is. It's not anyone I recognise. It might have been taken from an excerpt.
It has an extended sort of spy sequence through the streets of Dublin, which is actually Glasgow University. And
is it really?
Yes. And
that's actually depressed me even more. Yeah. I'd actually take half a star away now that I know that.
And most of it is, most of the Dublin scenes are shot on the Sound Street stage in Pinewood.
For the goodness sake.
So basically, they just hiked it across for it.
Basically, they sent
the
second unit director across to get some footage, and that's the extent of it.
Okay, so other films out this week. We'll start with, Need for Speed is the big opener. Aaron Paul from Breaking Bad fame.
He's earned his TV stripes.
He has.
Catapulted into the big leagues.
So this is his first of two big roles, the other one being a Nick Hornby adaptation, which will be with us shortly. But this is an adaptation of the video game series.
Yes, and video game adaptations are not good.
Reviews here have not been positive either.
No, and so Aaron Paul stars alongside Imogen Poots.
Hello, Imogen Poots.
And
what a beautiful couple.
Yeah, and Dominic Cooper is the bad guy
in the film.
Oh, don't ruin my thoughts and fantasies and dreams.
Right.
Moving on.
Yes. Dominic Cooper is the bad guy.
Wow. Yeah. There's a stretch.
Hey, yeah, British guy, bad guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Brain broke.
Yeah. Pretty much, yeah.
So it's a long way to go from science, bitch, to fast cars go boom.
Well, that's a step down. Pretty much what it is an attempt
to cash in on the Fast and Furious sure. crowd, because Fast and Furious makes so much money.
And as silly as they are, nobody does those things better than Fast and Furious franchise, so leave it to them.
Well, I've never seen one Fast and Furious movie, so I can't possibly comment.
Start at the fifth.
I will not watch it.
No, start with Drive Angry 3D, because it's got Nick Cage driving a car angrily in 3D.
I'll be fine with that, because I like Nick Cage. That's okay.
And his accomplice is...
Amber Heard.
Yes. Johnny Depp's new betrothal, but yes, Amber Heard.
Hmm. Good for him.
Yeah.
Next, we also have The Zero Theorem.
The Zero Theorem, which I like more than the two of you like.
Yes.
Terry Gilliam's latest.
Yeah, I wanted to like more than
me too.
It's passively entertaining sci-fi. It is not up there with his best work. It is not up there with Looper, but it is...
Oh, God.
Oh, no.
The fact that you even evoked Looper.
It's Adjustment Bureau-esque.
It's certainly as bad as Adjustment Bureau,
I actually only watched Adjustment Bureau a couple of months back. Yeah, a month ago, even.
It's weak, isn't it?
It's really weak.
Well, yep. It's got John Slattery with Changing Hats.
That's the best thing about it.
It's... Initially, you think it's going to be okay, and then you're
and then it's
not.
Not it just gets so complicated, and then tries to wrap things up so rapidly and hurriedly, and it's it's not great at all. But getting back to the Zero Theorem,
it a little bit. There was some good stuff in it.
The visual design
is wonderful. The view of modern or future London.
I think the story loses its way though.
There was a story?
There was, insofar as there was. it gets muddled and it gets... You don't care after a while. It's just...
The kid is a little to blame for that.
No. I don't mind it.
No, he probably is a little bit. I'd probably agree with Niall on that.
This is Lucas Hedges.
He comes in as an audience surrogate to hurry up.
Well, you're dumbing down his role there. If he was an audience surrogate, he'd just be standing there going, huh? Basically, it looks great, the plot is the weak point. It's a typical Terry Gilliam film.
Modern Terry Gilliam film.
Yes, true that. We're a long way from Brazil here.
And 12 Monkeys.
And 12 Monkeys.
So, other film opening this week, and in one cinema only, only playing in movies at Dundrum, is the Kickstarter-funded Veronica Mars film.
Ah! Did anybody watch the show here?
Nope.
Yes, I did. I watched it religiously. I have watched it 3 or 4 times.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
He's actually in the Veronica Mars outfit for his podcast, which had been wonderful to see in this video. But
yeah. That's a lovely wig.
Yeah,
wig? I'm quite a big fan of the series, to the extent that I considered kickstarting it, and then was like, no, these people are Hollywood.
They have
enough money. Yeah. So
she can ask her hubby for some money. Come on, Dax Shepard.
I hear it's opening on something kind of on demand at the same time.
It is. It's going on demand at the same time. It's getting limited release in US theaters as well. It had opened previewed in 10 selected cities.
What kind of business is it?
Yeah, so.
Interesting, because that model is an interesting one.
It is.
Because it's only one theater, that's going to be difficult.
It is, but clearly their eye is on the on-demand market, and it's just proof that this is where, is it where the future lies?
It's certainly a significant business model, and it's known that you're going to see a lot more of it. Mm. Whether that's going to make people money and that's going to be the future model,
you see,
it's hard to tell.
Studios are backing films that cost less than 10 and more than 70, and if it's anywhere in between, it's almost impossible to get the film made. Gary Oldman is currently trying to finance his next directorial feature. He says he can't make it.
Even Film 4 can only put money in. Really.
He says he'll need at least $60 million to make it, because it's a period piece.
Period equals money generally, and that kind of
indeed.
Yeah. So, but I mean, nil by mouth is it.
Oh,
absolutely
marvelous.
Stone Cold classic.
Very, but brilliant.
Interesting enough, though, Woody Allen still struggles to get financing, despite the box office of Midnight in Paris and Blue Jasmine, which have done very well. Midnight in Paris, particularly, was huge. It cost, I think, less than 20 million to make.
Yeah.
And it made a couple of hundred million.
Yeah, that's true. It's really, really
impressive.
It's
like French TV companies are basically funding Woody Allen films.
Absolutely
astonishing to me. Absolutely astonishing. They can't find 20 million quid.
And our last new release this week?
Under the Skin. Jonathan Glazer's very, very, very unreal drama.
Yes. we got into this a bit last week.
A bit, but I think we better focus on this now.
I'd like to go into it a bit more because I think it's a film that defies categorization in some ways. It's original.
Yeah. It's original, and yet it has so many clear influences.
Yeah, or reaches back big time.
Yeah.
In terms of the man who
films
her.
That's the big one, certainly. But there's the plot sounds like Species with pretensions.
Also touches Beatles about with the video camera thing, but you probably don't get into that too much. To be honest, it's a wonderful film.
It's magnificent. Best of the year so far.
Yes. I can't think of anything that... A couple of films come close from JDF like Grand Budapest, but Under the Skin, if it's not in my top three by the end of the year, this is going to be a good year.
Mm, indeed. And now for The Dissenting Voice?
It's the worst film I've seen this year. It bored
me. Wow. That's harsh.
It bored me. I haven't been bored by any other film this year, and this one bored me. And boring me is the cardinal sin.
But then again, I think this is quite reflective of what people have thought about Under the Skin so far. It is the best example of an audience divider I've seen in a long, long time.
No, it is, and it's been a while since we've had it.
No, indeed, it's great. I like it when these films come along. Anything to inspire debate.
Yep.
The last one I thought would be an audience divider would be Only God Forgives, and it turns out everyone hates it. Good. It's
not
terrible.
Everyone. No, it's a fine-looking film.
Oh, well, I know that, but...
Somebody that can move a camera, but move a good camera, should be a good-looking film to some degree. Mm. I mean, that's the least you should expect these days. It doesn't always happen, I'll grant you, but something else, I mean, anything else, it's an abomination.
Well, Under the Skin, I mean, apart from its references and just its creepy atmosphere, it's a great-looking film, too.
Beautiful, and the sound design and music is... out of this world.
Those things I will give you. I will give you that it looks well, and I will give you that the sound design is effective.
So anyway, that's pretty, what, 2 thumbs up, 1 thumb down.
Yep, and I'm not alone, thankfully.
No, and neither are we, Jay.
No, I see, and that's the thing. I think it's a film that it's going to puzzle audiences, but what I think will happen, I think its stature will grow over the next decade, and I think that'll be the mark of it, to be honest. And I think good films generally do that. They hang around for the long haul, and I think it's really, really great.
Yeah, it's not going to trouble our top 10 next week, I can't imagine.
No, it's a limited release here, so...
But still, if you can, seek it out.
And I think I'll be getting my money again this week, so I think I might have to pop along then.
I think I might have to too.
Yes.
I might pop to see Need for Speed.
It's not a date.
Definitely not a date.
No, I'm going to see Veronica Mars.
So. Sure. Good.
No, that's it in terms of what's out next week. Is there anything coming up that instantly strikes your fancy? Elton John, The Million Dollar Piano is a fine-looking title there.
Or just looking at the IFCO's list of upcoming releases. When's that? 22nd of March.
Yeah, I noticed the... prolific release calendar that I keep constantly updated from the Scanon website. No, he has printed that one from another location.
No offense. Yeah. Maybe I deserve to be.
By far the most popular page on the website, and any day that any post gets anything other than that, I am delighted.
Scanon.com for all your upcoming releases. I won't be allowed to forget it, and neither should you.
Yeah, because Empire gave the 300 sequel 3 stars.
If it'd been 4, I'd be angry.
They gave Nonstop 1.
Seems harsh. I haven't seen it.
They gave Calvary 5.
That's going to happen a lot. It seems to be happening a lot in the UK.
It's happened a lot here.
I don't get that either. It's not very good.
It's not this not it's okay.
It's just not very good.
It's not great.
We're recording, and there's a table in front of us with a picture of Breakfast at Tiffany's and a 4-star review from Empire.
Ouch.
Breakfast at Tiffany's is not a great film.
It's not, no.
It's not.
It's very entertaining, in fact, but not great.
I would go 3 stars if I was reviewing.
But would you say that Calvary is a full-star
film?
See, this kind of points to the redundancy of the star system.
Yeah, which in I don't a way. Use on my blog, actually. But I don't use stars. I can't be bothered. Because I finish a review and I'm not sure what the star rating is until somebody corners me and asks.
Yeah.
Even then, I have to spew out something.
The Sinan stars are weighted average of five criteria.
Which made it really difficult for me to give the Book Thief one star. But it's one and a half there, like, but it's stuff. Really, it's one.
I like the kind of aggregate things. You have to really think about A, what you like about it, B, what you don't like.
Yeah, but none of the things I like about The Book Thief are enough for me to justify giving it an extra half star.
So basically the soundtrack is the reason that it's...
Yeah, pretty much. God damn it, John Williams, stop being so good.
Didn't he stop being so good?
Oh, no. Okay, he hasn't made any classic scores lately, but come on, he'll never match Jaws.
No, nobody will ever. No, that's Jaws is to him what the Inception soundtrack
is to Hans Zimmer.
Hans Zimmer, yeah. So.
Oh, it's a pity that, because...
Or no, the Going for Gold sound team song is to Hans Zimmer.
Pity, as a childhood watcher of Going for Gold, that makes me very happy. Yeah.
But the problem is that is the score that Hans Zimmer will... It's one of the scores he'll be forever associated with, but he has done much better. The Thin Red Line, for my money, is his best score.
Fantastic.
Fantastic. Score, fantastic.
My film. Favorite score of the last few years would have to be John Greenwood's for The Master.
Oh, good choice. It's one of mine as well.
Astonishing. It is astonishing.
I'm a big fan of M83's score for Oblivion.
That would be a good choice if it wasn't such a forgettable film.
Yeah, the film, not... Yeah, passable.
I will see it probably at some point.
The score is it's my driving score. Is what I put
Isn't
on.
Isn't it
the
amazing how many scores that really should deserve better films?
The Mission.
Hang on, The Mission is a terrific film.
Yeah, it's not.
It is.
I actually just watched it for the Oscar night. And it's still great.
It's marvelous.
No,
it is not dull. Never dull.
It is dull.
You're never dull when you're looking at Ray McAnally.
Ray McAnally, what a man.
Between that, Jeremy Irons and Robert De Niro, all on and the
young,
energy.
And a young acting Liam Neeson.
Remember when Liam Neeson acted? I know we had this before, but he'll be back.
He won't. He really won't.
Oh, and by the way, the aforementioned Only God Forgives. Great score, bad film.
There we go.
Plenty of examples, but I'm sure we'll discuss those maybe another time.
Yes. There we go. There's a list for you. The top 10 worst movies.
best scores from bad films. Leave it with me. I'll have that with you for next week.
Excellent.
For your perusal.
Fantastic.
All right, should we leave it there for the week?
I think so. Thank you very much, gentlemen.